Welcome back, everybody. We've got another exciting guest. I call it exciting because I geek out on this stuff. But we've got Dr. Tom Rafai. He's the medical director for the Metabolic Health and Weight Management for the Henry Ford Health System in Metro Detroit, Michigan, a clinical assistant professor of medicine at Wayne State University in Detroit, and the founder of the health and wellness company Reality Meets Science. And he's a fellow of the American College of Physicians. He's also the author of the Flex 5 Lifestyle, and you can find that on the web at dpm.drtomrafai, drtomrafai.com. It's got a great master class on there in their program, which I think is awesome for cops. If you're looking to lose weight, get healthy, get in shape. The program will teach you really how to understand your body, how to make the most of your metabolism, the basics of metabolic health, including how type 2 diabetes occurs. If you've been paying attention to this show, one of the things that we really like to focus on is insulin resistance. And we know that upwards of 70%, if not more, of police officers in America are insulin resistant. And it is almost always undiagnosed. And that leads to type 2 diabetes and other metabolic disorders and chronic diseases. But Dr. Rafai also, his program focuses on how to improve your relationship with food, how to address emotional eating, how to leverage the five keys to optimal wellness. What are those five keys of optimal wellness? The way he lays it out, mind matters. Nutrition, activity, environments, and then accountability, all those things incredibly important. But really, what the program does is it helps you find that balance of discipline without extremism. Because sometimes when people are trying to lose weight, they're starting a new program, they feel like it's an all or nothing endeavor. And really, what we talk about on the show is how important it is just to get started and understand what works for you and how to optimize your results. And then I'd also recommend you go back and listen to the episode with Matt Martin. Matt is the co-founder of Precision Health Reports with Dr. Bill Cromwell. And we talk about how to read lab reports and the best way to really get those things where you can get these labs done independently, whether you're going to your personal physician or not. You can bring this information to your physician and work with them in conjunction to beginning a healthy lifestyle change and implementing a plan. But it's a great episode. Enjoy, and we'll talk to you soon. Greetings, all. Welcome back to another episode of the Coptimizer podcast. I am really excited to have our guest today, Dr. Tom Rafai. He is a doctor who specializes in weight loss, and I'm going to let him jump into his background. But I read a document of his that I do have it right here in front of me. And obviously, those of you that are listening and not watching won't be able to see it, but it's a review article entitled Wellness, Weight Loss, and Disease Prevention with Five Keys to Healthy Lifestyle Change. And being the Coptimizer podcast, this is perfect. And I do have to give credit to my friend Matt Martin. I don't know if you know Matt or not, but Matt's the one that shared this with me via Twitter. Matt's been a guest on the podcast. He is a co-founder of a company called Precision Health Reports, and which they do lab work, and that's how I got introduced to you. But I've got a ton to ask you, but I'm going to turn it over to you to introduce yourself, sir.
Well, thank you, Patrick. It's a pleasure to be on the Coptimizer podcast, and a big fan of Matt Martin and Dr. Bill Cromwell over there at Precision Health Reports. I've been through that assessment, and And I guess, you know, one thing I'll start off with is that you noticed that, you know, weight loss was sandwiched in the middle there, right? So wellness and disease prevention were the real, no pun intended here, like the bread, right? I mean, what's really the pillars. And I've, you know, evolved over time in my background being in internal medicine training, you know, primary care, but then my training allowed me, in fact, I should jump back and say that, you know, both my parents were physicians and, you know, they came here as legal immigrants and my they were very much into just you're American now, you know, baseball, apple pie, Chevrolet. My mother even tried to brainwash me that all doctors were insane and crazy. Don't be a doctor, be a baseball player, go to Hollywood, you know, do something American. And I just realized I was genetically designed to be a doctor as I slowly progressed through. I went to get a degree in psychology. You know, everybody's been through issues in their life. I'll kind of leave that for another episode, but I was inspired by a psychologist to help me pull my head out of my peep. And then slowly but surely said, you know what? Medicine is my path. And the real, in fact, I was training Michigan, the police officers for the Michigan State University at the time that I was the president of the student of the Olin Health Center Student Health Advocacy Program. Just as an undergrad, you know, psychology and then pre-med, and then went into Wayne State in Detroit. Wayne State Medical School had one of the few medical schools that had a strong nutrition curriculum. I mean, let's face it, we all kind of know that one of the things that an MD may or may not, I mean, truth be told, if you do your training right, you could become a master at nutrition and lifestyle. But because of the way it's designed, on average, often an MD means you haven't had any training in lifestyle or nutrition. So it depends on which path you take. Wayne State was an exception to the rule. And then where I did my internal medicine training was had a robust nutrition and preventive medicine department under the Department of Internal Medicine, and psychologists, exercise physiologists, underwater weighing, dietitians, demonstration kitchen. It was just great. I mean, I actually had a kind of a lifestyle medicine nutrition fellowship built into my internal medicine training. Tons of moonlighting hours when they used to allow moonlighting hours during residency, but also when they used to allow 36-hour shifts. I'm glad they don't do that anymore. And then, you know, came right out into practicing with in that model. You know, I didn't just kind of went right into multidisciplinary care and learned over time that, you know, I myself had binge eating disorder. And I think my father had it, and it was really not diagnosed. And as you know, I think we discussed, I lost my youngest brother to binge eating disorder. So I started to take a different path towards how we discuss weight loss. I hope that we convey a message in this podcast. At the end of the day, what we really want is for everyone to be happy and healthy. And whatever the result, whether your blood pressure is better, your cholesterol, your LDL particle number, if you know, and ApoB, as Dr. Cromwell and Matt Martin would say, and your blood sugar, triglycerides, all of that, and weight is all a side effect of you finding your why, what drives you. And then, of course, ultimately, those are markers that happen as a side effect, rather than worshiping at the altar of a scale or a number. Because, you know, what's your why? You know, what is your real why? And it could be to be the best law enforcement officer there is. Fantastic. It could additionally be, you know, I'm almost 56. I've got a 6 and an 8-year-old. You know, I don't know if this may not be sound totally appropriate, but I'm sorry. when I'm in my 60s, I'm just not going to be looking at teenage boys frail. It's not going to happen. I'm going to be in shape. And I'm sorry. You know, maybe that sounds like old school, but
oh, no.
You know, my daughter's going to have a robust father there. That's just, you know, that's one of my whys as well. But whatever someone is,
it's a great why.
And I've heard them all. I mean, I've heard guys say, look, I just got divorced. I'd like to have my parts work until I'm 90. Whatever someone's why is. And by the way, we have great data on lifestyle and erectile function. So, you know, so I said, that's legit, man. That's your why. But you need to know it, even if you don't know it immediately. And it's usually an enduring thing. It can change over time, but it's typically not my why is I want to get off these pills. That's let's peel the onion further kind of why. Okay, then why? 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 Yeah. Why? Until you get a real, oh, that's a why. You know, then my other question, the first of two questions, are what are your non-negotiables? Because I realize I'm a DOC, not GOD. There's a bit difference, and doctors got to realize that. You know, I'm in your house when I'm coaching you. You're not in my house, so I got to know where what room I can go into, and
you know, cops and docs, they both get accused of acting like that sometimes. So,
right? I mean, is you know, and it's so true that. You know, once you know that you're not, you become better at what you're doing. Even the best martial artists are very humble in what they do. I mean, the last people that are going to get in a fight, for instance, I have an example of how, and this is maybe an extreme example in a sense, but it wasn't a reverse psychology intention. But one patient, he was an ex line worker at General Motors. His name was Larry, and he's now out. You know. 8 years maintaining his 100-pound loss, reversed his diabetes, heart disease, and everything. And we brought a bunch of what we would call my methodology is called the Flex Five. You know, the five are, as you said, psychology, nutrition, physical activity, environments, and accountability. And we'll talk a little bit more about each of these, but the skills and knowledge in each of those areas. And we said, which key or domain, if you will, was most important? What about it? And he would say, and he said in his voice, we got to him, he said, say, it's that non-negotiable thing, doc, you know, so we call it the 5% fun zone sometimes too. I said, okay, Larry, what about it? He said, well, I told you it was a Coney dog. I said, okay, Larry. And so he goes, well, you didn't beat me over the head with a stick about it. Right, Larry. I mean, you just told me it was non-negotiable. Why would I start negotiating? You just said it was non-negotiable. He goes, yeah, but you know, I haven't had one in 4 years because of that. Oh, really? Now everybody's leaning in. How did that work? He goes, well, you told me it was my choice. And so I kept saying maybe next week, maybe next week. I kept feeling better. So I kept saying maybe next week, maybe next week. Next thing I knew was 4 years later. And I'll tell you what, Patrick, is about three claps in, everyone is into. And then do you hear that? But, and then everybody just stops because he's got something else to say. I can tell you right now, doc, if you told me I couldn't have one, I would have had 10 the first week. My blood pressure would have been up. My weight wouldn't have been down. I would have lied to you about it and told you your diet sucks. And now he's right into my chest.
And it had been all your fault.
Yeah. And this is almost word for word. And I could just hear the 8, 9, 10, whatever other docs ever told him, you can't eat this, can't eat that. No, that's not my job. Everybody has agency. You're all big boys and girls. You decide what we want to give is information. You decide what to do with that. And I balance it against your why and make a decision because, you know, there are sometimes calculated risks are just fine. I mean, food isn't all, I mean, look, you know, I eat to live, right. But it's okay to live to eat sometimes too. I mean, you don't have to modify every recipe, you know, once in a while, grandma's recipe is fine. How often, how much and all of that balance, that's an issue. And how do we get into the skills of being honest with ourselves when we know there are some foods that are, you know, really so inviting. If you want to use the word addictive, I get a little bit, you know, that, you know, maybe comfort food dependency. I know for a fact myself, I have a long list of, sometimes I call it the wolf, you know, I don't try to pretend a wolf is a dog and bring the wolf into the house and then blame the wolf when the wolf bites me. Cause I, you know, pretended it was a dog. It's like, it's a beautiful animal meant to be outside. I'm not going to blame the wolf for the wolf biting me. Now, if I want to pet a wolf, fine. I go hire an animal trainer and I pet the wolf. And then I accept that the wolf has to stay outside and I indulge myself. It's like Haagen-Dazs. If I want it, I go hunt and gather it and I eat some and I enjoy it. And I don't go into guilty pleasure cheat day and all that. But then I admit that it's best that it's hunted and gathered and left outside because the serving size for Haagen. Oh, by the way, what is the serving size for Haagen-Dazs, Patrick? Do you know the serving size? Don't worry. It's just the container, whatever the container is. That's the serving size.
That was going to be my answer as well. How big is the container and how much time do I have?
Yeah. So, I mean, when we do bring them in the house, because I've got kids and they can handle it, they're metabolically different than me. And we buy the minis. That way I know that there's not going to be any left around for me. So there's all kinds of practical ways to do this. And every once in a while I'll have one too. So, you know, just to kind of, you know, pull back a little bit, you know, when, you know, I've worked with, law enforcement, you know, one of the most important, these are all, I mean, everybody's just, you know, people, but the stress management end of it is really pronounced. You know, it's a very significant, you know, issue to try to manage the issues of of the, you know, the three levels of control, you know, what we can control, what we can influence, and what we cannot control, especially when, you know, you're not talking about minor issues here. I mean, other people, you know, lives on the line. This is not just my, you know, your personal subjective space. You know, you are, you know, as you were comparing doctors and law enforcement, police officers, we're really dealing with other people's lives in our hands. Yet still, you know, we have to manage that sleep. We have to manage, and we can talk about that. We have to manage our perspective, you know, that we are, and maybe I would like to figure out a way to, I said DOC, not GOD. Maybe we can say COP, not GOD. Again, now I just figured that one out, right? That we have to kind of understand our spot, and that it's okay to have that humbleness and that acceptance of
well, I do want to touch on something that you said there real quick, because,
please,
you know, when it comes to cops, everybody likes to make the jokes that cops are overweight. And you know, we all love to make the donut joke. And there's a presentation that I do that, you know, I show some pretty funny slides, they generally get a few laughs. But at the core of it really is getting people to understand that do we ever take a step back and wonder why? Why are 80% of cops overweight? Why are 70% of them insulin resistant and don't know it in most cases? Quite frankly, they're undiagnosed. And, you know, going back to Bill Cromwell and Doc Greenwald and the others that I've worked with over the years, you know, it's we've kind of come to this. Eventually, I came to the conclusion that if we're really going to help people motivate some behavioral change, one of the first places that we can go, especially for a cop, is to the blood. Because the name of my presentation and my program is called The Blood Doesn't Lie. And I've mm-hmm. done this, and we've presented to IACP, the national FOP, because as cops, I really want them to put their investigators hat on and think of this, you know, think of their own body as a crime scene in a way, like, you know, what the hell happened here and how did I get here? Because I came out of the academy, very fit, in shape, athletic, sharp, rested, and then next thing I know, it's a year later and I've gained 20 pounds, and it's 2 years later and I've gained 30 pounds. I've put a few more notches in my gun belt. I've had to buy a new uniform. And what I try to do is really walk them into this like they are looking at a crime scene and think about, well, what are the forces at play, what are the factors at play? And then we start all the things you just mentioned, right? You know, sugar, highly processed foods, sleep, you know, disrupted sleep patterns and stress. It all starts to kind of add up really quickly. And ultimately what I try to do is lead them to this understanding that, well, there's a reason a lot of cops are overweight, and it's not necessarily all your fault. But there is an understanding that has to take place. And that's why I love number 5 in your 5 keys to healthy lifestyle is accountability. Mm. You know, at some point, we all have to become accountable for ourselves, our own health, and for our future. And we can't blame the job. We can't blame, you know, McDonald's is the only place open at night. You have to get to that point. But before you can get there, it helps if you have an understanding of the physiological processes that are occurring. And that's, and again, so that's when I go back to your key number 3, you know, mind matters. I think, you know, sometimes you might be able to even put that like number 1.
Yes, to because me, that once, is actually once, number 1 now.
I see it. So I just wanted to give you a quick, you know, kind of a quick understanding of where I'm at on this.
I like that. And as a matter of fact, let me then take it through this pathway, because at the end of the day, that is so powerful. No matter what we're talking about in terms of our why, you know, I have a cardiology colleague. I may not have titled, you know, my book this, but, you know, he wrote a book called, you know, Dead Execs Don't Get Bonuses. And the fact is, there's a major risk for heart attack, stroke. These things can be detected. I'm a big fan, for instance, and I would say that particularly if, you know, in the area of law enforcement, maybe even in at 40 to start, but certainly at 50 years of age, and I'm sure you've discussed this with Dr. Cromwell and Matt Martin, but a coronary artery calcium scan, perfect, no, but way before their symptoms. And stress tests will not detect something unless there's about a 50% blockage at least. And a lot of these cholesterol plaques that are in arteries that rupture like a pimple popping, I often call that disease that's in our arteries, acne of the arteries, because they're soft, fleshy, like pimples, and can pop. And then what blocks the rest of the way is a blood clot that suddenly forms. So it takes 30 years to develop a 30% blockage. No symptoms. Go right up the stairs. Don't feel it. One day your blood pressure rises from stress, just like a kid squeezing that pimple. Sorry for that sound. Pops that pimple, that plaque. And then within 30 seconds, after 30 years of developing a 30% blockage, in 30 seconds, the rest of the 70% is blocked and you got yourself heart attack or stroke. You can see what's smoke, not fire. The calcium isn't a problem. It's your immune system trying to put a hard roof on that thing to try to stop it from erupting. It's not actually a problem, but it's a reflection of a problem, and it can be detected and you can act. Also, our blood pressure, you can get it cheap. And I don't have anything to do with Omron. Omron doesn't pay me to tell you this. I'm a big fan of FDA-approved blood pressure devices. You can go to validatebp.org if you want to find another company. It's a nonprofit website that accumulates all of the FDA-approved blood pressure devices. I think it's $30. I've got one, an Omron Series 3. If you want to get fancy, get as fancy as you want. Check your blood pressure at least once a week in the morning. You're supposed to be seated, both feet flat on the floor, back against backrest, arm at heart level, resting quiet environment, preferably at least 2 minutes rested. You want to go with the Japanese guidelines, 5 minutes if it's US, but let's be honest with you, we're often in a rush, so at least 2 minutes. Hit that button. Ideally, honestly, it's less than 120 over 80. I know a lot of people think 120 over 80 is optimal, but that technically is the threshold of 120 is now considered elevated. 129, not hypertension, but elevated, or if you want to call it pre-hypertension. 130 and higher for the systolic is now considered hypertension. Systolic is the top number. That's the pressure in the artery when the heart beats. And the bottom, 80, is now considered hypertension. That's a factor that can be improved with stress management, with sleep. Obviously, if you want, we can deep dive into stealth salt that's everywhere. Just increasing fruits and vegetables with a food bag that we can. I've got where's my Lions food bag? I actually left it in my car outside.
I got an idea. And I wasn't planning on doing this, but I think maybe this will be helpful for people that are listening to this. And maybe they are 10, 20, 30 or more pounds overweight. Let's go back and kind of do the crime scene analysis and then look at steps that we can take. Because one of the things you mentioned there, I think is really important. 120 over 80. If someone tells, if you go and you go to get your annual physical, let's say you go at 2 o'clock in the afternoon, because it's the only time you can get in. You've had 3 cups of coffee already. You've walked up a flight of stairs. You've been waiting in the waiting room. Maybe you're frustrated. Things going on at work, at home, whatever. You're thinking about where you're going next. You go into the doctor's office. You jump on a scale. They weigh you. They see that you don't take anything out of your pockets, right? You've got to wait. Now they first thing they do when they sit you down, they take your blood pressure. And rarely has my blood pressure ever been in a normal range, because I do check mine fairly often. It's probably good. It's probably good. And if a cop hears it's okay, that's probably okay. Well, maybe it is, maybe it isn't. But what you said is 120 over 80 is at the high end, just like your blood, resting blood glucose. At 100 is really, if you're over 100 or below 120, generally what you're going to be told is, it's not a problem. That's something we're going to have to keep an eye on. But that really should be your first warning signal when your resting blood glucose hits that one. If you see 3 digits there, you're on your way. And then you can do a little deep dive. But let's just say I'm an officer. You and I have never met. And I come in to get a physical and get a checkup. Maybe I am overweight. And I heard, hey, I don't want to hear what this Flex 5 plan is, and I want to get started. So maybe just, we can spend maybe 20, 30 minutes just talking about what the program is, why it's beneficial, and how you've seen it work with others.
Well, I think what one thing that's really important is to emphasize some of just at least some of the basics on the numbers that you mentioned. You're right. We do a crappy job in the doctor's office of checking blood pressure correctly. First of all, one data point, even if it was checked correctly, when it comes to blood pressure, is kind of meaningless. And it is the number one biomarker of all time. I mean, if you want to talk about everybody's talking about microbiome and all that, it's great. I'm fancy into deep diving on that stuff too. But blood pressure, resting at home, what we call, ambulatory, if you will, home blood pressures checked once a week. If you can, a little more often, just written down, Omron, cheap, do it at home first thing in the morning within an hour. Yes, you're right. Before you drink that coffee, would be great. And frankly, if you smoke, and obviously, I'm going to recommend that you try to quit over time, compassionately, of course, because let's be honest with you, there's reasons people smoke before coffee and a cigarette. Write those numbers down. That will help a doc a lot more than a single blood pressure number. Absolutely, your blood sugar fasting in the morning, it should be under 100. Otherwise, from 100 to 125 is considered prediabetes. But there's another number that you don't need to be fasting for. It's called an A1C, and that number is normal if it's below 5.7. 5.7 to 6.4 for this number that's now very often done. A1C, 5.7, 6.4, considered prediabetes.
And that's
Below
called, if
five
you
point.
look on your lab test, that's going to be HbA1c is the way you're
Yes,
going to see
often.
it.
Yeah, you'll see it variably. HbA1c, A1c, another thing we're bad at is being consistent about that, but it'll either be part of the name, HbA1c, sometimes alone, A1c. Rarely do we say glycated hemoglobin anymore. It's usually A1c is somewhere in there. Now, with that being said, we've got blood pressure, we got blood sugar, and I guess I'll just, leave the go listen to the podcast with Dr. Cromwell for the lipids.
Yeah.
Now, as far as the and we can talk about that more if we have some time. Now, with as far as Flex 5 goes, and we can maybe just hone in on the nutrition part, because yes, I agree that Mind Matters is important, but we've discussed we're presuming you have a why, and that you've got some idea of what your non-negotiables are. I'm going to just say, when it comes to your non-negotiables, there's what I believe is that if you don't have a pressure, a release valve on your pressure cooker, it is going to be like cooking with a pressure cooker without a release valve. But just keep in mind how often and how much you truly need that to not want to kill me or Patrick. Okay, basically that's we don't want to die. So you can have it as often as you think. What I would just suggest, and maybe this is just from me, you may think you have the endless willpower. The science is pretty clear. Your home environment, as much as you can, you don't want to create war with your spouse. You don't want to create war with the children. Sure enough, it may not be that you can clean the whole house out of everything and have a pristine, perfect just fruits and vegetables and lean proteins and beans and lentils. But as close as you can come to kind of rearranging the home environment as much as possible and having a food bag to take with you, and then having maybe a dedicated day a week, maybe it's a Saturday, maybe it's a Sunday, and have a pizza night or whatever it is to really, that would be great. If not, at least maybe move things so that maybe your fruits and vegetables that aren't in a crisper so you forget about them for a month. Everybody's seen the year-old apple. Put those at eye level. Maybe a fruit basket is on the kitchen island, the more durable fruits, not stuck away that you can't see them. The things that are more tempting, try to put them in the opaque drawer. Every little thing you can do to set up your environment so that the choice that is compatible with your goal is the easy choice, the default choice. And then you have to challenge yourself more to get to things that might be more not aligned with your goal, the better. Okay. Just the real factor in there is not creating war with others, that are in the house. We don't want to create divorce. Believe me, I've seen it all.
Yeah, and that's why
Now,
it's always good to get family on board with you if you can. And that's, for police agencies that might be looking at wellness programs that, and again, I encourage starting with labs. Make sure you're getting labs. But if you have a wellness program that also sponsors your spouse to go through the same type of testing and the same type of program, incredibly powerful, very, very powerful. So anytime you can get a spouse on board with what you're doing, that's gonna, and you can align those goals, and hopefully the goal for a family unit like that is we both want to live long and healthy. But it's hard. It's hard, right? You're talking about environment. If you've got one person that's constantly sabotaging the other by what they put out, you know, instead of an apple being there, if it's a bag of chips or whatever. And we can talk about why, you know, these highly processed, hyper palatable foods, and, you know,
well, that's
why
true.
That can be a problem.
It's what, and what you're saying is not opinion. It's published fact. We've seen from the English longitudinal study of aging, we know for a fact when life partners, spouses, whether it's quitting smoking, physical activity, weight loss, when they're on board with each other, the odds of success are significantly better. It's actually even more so when they both have room to improve. When one is already grooving and the other one's jumping on board, still helpful, but when they're both really have room for improvement and they both want to do it, the odds, the improvement is even better for both than one who has room for improvement and the other one is with, but has already been there on maintenance and is just kind of, you know, being a coach. Because sometimes it becomes difficult to be a coach as a family member. You know, you're emotionally attached, and it's not exactly the same, but it's like 1 degree away. You may have heard of the saying, a doctor who treats himself as a fool for a patient. When you're too attached to something, you become unobjective. But yes, the more you can get on board, the better. But if not, you have to learn assertiveness skills. You have to learn that. And that's not aggressive and it's not passive. The no thank you, the simple no thank you. And these are my borders. You know, this is the line, without going into the, you're trying to kill me with that stuff and creating war. It's a very challenging. We've had practice in groups where people just learn to say no thank you, even to a bread basket. You know, people feel embarrassed. It's literally a skill that you have to learn and be comfortable with. But 100% what you're saying is true. Now, why do these high, what we call now, the trust me, it's a matter of tongue in cheek. The acronym does sound like crap. It's CRRAHP. It's calorie rich, refined, and highly processed. And Matt Martin just published it on LinkedIn. So crap food. And I admit I like a little crap once in a while myself. But the fact is that we have seen from Barbara Roll's lab at Penn State to now what's coming out of Kevin Hall and at the NIH metabolic wards, that humans need a certain weight of food per day for satiation. It's not the only thing that satisfies us. There's mouth feel and taste and chew. There's no doubt about that, but there's a certain weight of food that we need. Let's just say it's around 3 pounds, men a little more, women a little less, but each individual, it's pretty close. And it's much easier or it's less challenging to get someone to change a ratio of the foods they eat than to just tell them to eat less. Just eat less food. Go from 3.5 pounds of food a day to 2 pounds of food per day. Good luck with that one. You know, walking around starving, it's just not going to work. And so Barbara Rolls has done many studies in which, for instance, people were randomized to portion control only. Now, this is a portion of blueberries. This is a portion of chips. We're going to take all of these low calorie concentration, or what they say, low calorie density, which really just means foods with high natural intrinsic water content, meaning water is in the food, what she calls wet foods. Let's say grapes versus raisins, although there's better ways to, you know, I hate to beat up on raisins because actually I got a lot of reasons why raisins are going to be a metabolic benefit versus jelly beans, you know, right. Potassium, fiber, antioxidants. But when it comes to calories, it takes a half pound of grapes to make 1 ounce of raisins. And the bottom line is a simple thing for people to understand. The water has been removed. And we see this, whether it's a whole baked potato, you know, you've got way, way less calories than when it comes to potato chips, where you have dried it out and not only replaced the water with the highest calorie density liquid, that's at 4,000 calories per pound for oils. Where's broccoli at? 150 calories per pound, maybe even actually less than that. Average fruit, 250 calories per pound. So when I hear this myth that fruit causes weight gain, who's sitting for that much? That the food group that has maybe bananas are at 400 calories a pound. Even then, if you eat 4 pounds of banana, I mean, not including the peel, that's 1,600 calories. I mean, please stop beating up on fruit. Fruit's not the whole fruit. I'm not talking about juice. I'm talking about whole fruit. So one of the tricks that we found that has worked for people who like high volume, and many of us guys like high volume, is high water content foods. But what are other high water content foods besides whole fruits and vegetables? Things you cook water into, particularly things like beans, lentils, and peas, probably the most underrated food group. They have not only the water content, which basically triples in weight. Whenever you look at a dry, even a grain, dry grain, preferably whole grain, but even if it's a refined grain, if you look at a bean, lentil, or pea, or a grain, look at that dry serving size. If it's 50 grams, it'll be 150 after you cook it, whether it's oatmeal, farro, ancient grain, refined grain. Try to go for the more whole grain, though, or even high protein, high fiber beans, lentils, peas. You'll be surprised how full you get on less calories. And then in the animal world, you've got high, yogurts, egg whites, fish, chicken breast. These things are all mostly water. Now, I'm not talking about the deep fried version of fish and chicken, but these are all high water content foods, 75% or more water. Now, everyone wants a little crunch and a little, we're not saying don't have any dry food. We're saying that's where you portion control. And when you look at Dr. Roll's trials, when people were taught to have as much as you want of the high water content foods, don't worry about portion controlling those. Focus on the foods that have what we would call high calorie density, where if you look at a label, the calories are higher than the weight of the food. Probably we'd have to spend a moment separate on that. But let's give you some examples of dry foods. I'm a board certified breadaholic. I'm sorry to say it. I have bread in my life, but the fact is I know that I've got to think about bread as how much, and then really enjoy it. I can't just pound it bread endlessly. But that's dry carbohydrate. But most foods are not that are calorie dense. They're, people just think carbs. Most of them are dry and fatty. Like look at a Ritz cracker sometime. People think of it as carb. Look at the calories. It's half carbs, half fat because it's oil and refined flour. That's what most things are. So
and
that's
oftentimes seed oils too that are not all oils are created equal.
Of course, yes. And in small amounts, low saturated fat oils can be healthy, but they're so calorie dense when it comes to weight management, you just have to be aware of how often, how much. Not about zero. It's just about that balance. And remember, if you're a guy, you're probably looking at about 4 pounds of food a day. So one of the simplest snacks around, and it's not the only one, but just to start off with, please dispel the myth that whole fruit, particularly things like berries, but even whole fruits like apples. And I'm sorry, Dr. Grundy, this guy out there in the plant paradox who's trying to claim that apples are toxic. I mean, come on, man. Apple a day keeps the doctor away. Still applies. Sorry. Peach, all your stone fruits, citrus, you name it. Pretty much if it's a whole fruit, that's a great snack. On the more calorie dense end for crunch, there's really good evidence that whole plant foods, nuts included, you don't absorb all the calories. We've seen studies on nuts. Yep. Research is actually going through poop. You only absorb about 75% of the calories versus a nut butter. I'm not saying don't eat peanut butter. Do whatever you like. I'm just giving you information. But you absorb about 98% of something that's been chewed for you.
And a lot of that's because of the fiber content, correct? And the type of fiber that's in it?
It's the intact structure. I mean, we have something that's intact like that. It's hard for enzymes to get in every nook and cranny. So even if the fiber is still in there, if the fiber has been busted up and just the infrastructure has been broken, now the surface area is now just flat and wide, essentially. And the ability for digestive enzymes to access is now free and open. But with whole fruits, with whole nuts, with whole beans and lentils, look at corn. We all know we can see what's, when they look in the toilet, you can see chunks right there. You get a calorie advantage because calories only count if you absorb them. And so one of the advantages of whole plant foods is, you don't absorb all the calories. And I'm not a vegan. I'm a flexitarian. There's nothing I don't eat unless I don't like it.
Well, yeah. And that's a good place to kind of pause for a second, because here's the thing. What works for one person may not work for another. And it was funny you mentioned Dr. Grundy and the plant paradox. What can be confusing for everybody, not just cops, but everybody, is, hey, look, I realize that I'm overweight, I'm not healthy, I need to lose weight. My best friend, my neighbor, my whoever, they did this diet. And I have to point the fingers back at myself because, and I've talked about this kind of ad nauseum on earlier podcasts, but I was a zealot for the zone diet back in the late 90s because I long story short, I stumbled across that program. I did it and I had amazing success. I was weighing and measuring my food. I was breaking it down into zone blocks. And in the end, it's still to this day, I think, a very effective way for people to lose weight and to improve performance. But it does require a level of commitment and understanding and weighing and measuring and things that not everybody has time for, patience for, or quite frankly, the motivation to try to understand why. And so over the years, I've definitely softened my position in that you have to find something that first is scientifically backed. You can't just guess and take chances of doing the wrong thing. That's why, again, I'll go back, get your labs done first. And so you know what your starting point is and get yourself retested at intervals, because if you're doing the wrong thing, and I'll give you my own personal story, we can talk about that later, but I have lipase small A, it's a genetic marker mm-hmm. in my blood.
Me too.
And LP because little A. And when I did a keto for athletes nutrition plan, my lipase small A went through the roof. Dr. Cromwell wound up doing a CIMT with Dr. Cromwell, finding that I did have some soft plaque that was starting to form after years and years of being very, very healthy. So I had to do a complete reversal. I've righted the ship, but I found out that, guess what? That's probably not a plan for me. But I also know that maybe you're familiar with the work of Dr. Sarah Hallberg. She's actually was my backyard neighbor. Sadly, Dr. Hallberg passed away, but, she uses a ketogenic approach, and for a lot of people, that can be a very effective way to get your blood glucose under control. You can reverse diabetes that way. But for some people, it can, the sustainability of that plan can be challenging. For some people that go on to like an Esselstyn plan or a more of a plant-based plan, that can also be very effective. But for basically the same reasons, that can be challenging for some
strict in the other extreme. Yeah.
Yeah. So again, you mentioned something in this paper that I wanted to touch on, because you talk about where it takes about 2 years. If you can get somebody to a point where they've lost weight consistently for about 2 years, then they really have a firm understanding of what works for them, what they're doing is successful. And, I used to own and operate a CrossFit gym, and I kind of had a saying then that if I could keep a client for 3 weeks, then the success of having them there for 3 months went up, pretty significantly. Like we found, like when we were looking at why we were having such high turnover with some of our athletes, there was a lot of things that contributed to it, but we really kind of had to adapt what we were doing and walk people through that process, make sure they were comfortable for that first 3 weeks. Cause if we could keep them there for 3 weeks, we were more likely to have them for 3 months. And so if we progress them along at a pace that worked for them, in a way that worked for them, if we had them for 3 months, then we had them for 3 years. And those are the ones that really, the changes that they go through are just phenomenal. It's unbelievable. And so, yeah, I mean, I guess that was a long way of saying, you got to be careful about what you're doing and why. But like you said at the beginning of this, if you understand your why, then you're going to find a way. And you have to give yourself some grace, but you also have to be willing to hold yourself accountable to find out what's going to work for you. What are the foods that you're going to enjoy, that you're going to eat, that aren't going to be sending you in the wrong direction when it comes to improving your metabolic health, versus what are the things that are successful? And then you can kind of find the things that work. You can build synergy around that. And that's what I love about what you're talking about from the flexitarian perspective, because it gives people some room in the middle of the extremes to find what works well for them.
Yeah, and there's a spectrum. So you make a great point in the world of accountability that biometrics don't lie, blood pressure, lipids. I would say if you can't get to a, you know, the LDL particle, you know, any standard lipid test, you have something called the non-HDL. It's your total minus your HDL, the so-called good, let's say 200 for your total, and your HDL is 50. 200 minus 50 gives you your non-HDL of 150. Most labs are calculating that for you now. That's the what the National Lipid Association would consider the gold standard for a standard lipid test. You know, ideally, as a population, we would like people to be under 100. If you're younger, maybe under 130. If you have heart disease, maybe even way under 100. But and then your A1C and fasting glucose, I might actually encourage if your doctor is willing to throw a fasting insulin in there, because that is what really goes up first before blood sugar. And I would say a fasting insulin, if you're not pre-diabetes, hey, no, my fasting sugar is 90 and my A1C is 5.4. Great. If you really want to seal the deal, your fasting insulin at five or less, because if your fasting insulin is 14, you know, your pancreas is really pushing out a lot of insulin and it's going to be eventually burning out.
Yeah.
And I do want to emphasize, since I'm with you, I'm a brother from another mother on the genetic lipoprotein little A, or what we call LPA. That's genetic. Everyone should have, most of us in lipidology believe everyone deserves to have that once. My parents don't even have it. I'm one of those spontaneous mutations. So where it came from, I said, oh, my parents don't have it. My mentor, who's a lipidologist, said, I should just have it anyway. Sky high. So either the milkman or I had a spontaneous mutation. Who knows?
Yeah, it's one of those things. Do you have any siblings?
I do. They but they're half brothers. You know, they're half brothers, and they don't. But they have really, as far as LDL goes, as far as non-HDL goes, they have a significant elevation. So they have something from their mother, my stepmother. There's a couple things on. You're right. Keto to me is a great kickstart. It's an appetite suppressor. If it works for you, I think we've done many times where we've helped people start with keto and then we transition them over time to a form of flexitarian that works for them, maybe more on the lower carb and the more, you know, if you want to call it cleaner carb end of things. But there are a couple of, I think, very reliable calories count, but you don't have to count calories. It's low calorie density approaches. I mentioned Professor Barbara Rolls at Penn State. She's authored, and I don't get anything, I don't get paid to tell you this, but her books, Volumetrics, Feeling Full on Fewer Calories, volume, the word volume and metrics merged as one, where the M and the E are shared. So Volumetrics, one word, great books. I think the original one is the best, but any of them are great. I think she would argue that her most recent one is the best, but whatever the case may be. The other one is, and I admit I was a manuscript writer for this one, but a manuscript reviewer for this one, but I don't get any financial benefit from it at all. But as I was the associate medical director for the Pritikin Longevity Center, it was authored when I was there, but the Pritikin Edge, all eyes, Pritikin, written by cardiologist Dr. Robert Vogel, also covers calorie density, but also covers sodium. It has a number of great recipes, just like Volumetrics, and even a 2-week plan, all kinds of great recipes for soups and salads, and it's flexitarian, right? There's some plant pure, some, you know, there's even elk in there. There's, you know, so it's a flexitarian type approach. But I do want to say, and I know, you know, it may sound sacrilegious, but the bottom line is evidence base is there, especially if someone is doing it with supervision. So don't fall off your chair here. Maybe I'll just do a quick stand up for this one. Okay. All right. You know, medical meal replacements under supervision for people that are just trying to get a kickstart and they either don't have time or they don't have the skills yet or really trying on precision nutrition. Medical formulas. Now, I mean, the commercial one is Slim Fast, and that, you know, it was used in the diabetes prevention program, and it's fine. But for some people, especially when they're on the run, and we've done this with law enforcement. Hey, if you're on the run, fine. Just throw a couple, preferably high protein Slim Fast, not the regular ones, but they're out there. They're literally called high protein Slim Fast. High protein Slim Fast. Some fruit, you know, some nuts. Just throw. Just get your safety bag. I call it the. I'm sorry. What's the rating on this podcast? PG-13.
Whatever you want.
Okay. We just call it the comp. It's a complex skill. We call it just throw some healthy shit in the bag. You know, just doesn't have to be complicated. You know, 7 hours on Sunday, portion control. If you do, great, do that. But yeah, put your put your meals in the, that's great. But otherwise, just, throw some things in that bag, make sure you've got your safety bag with you. And meal replacements can be a healthy protein source, but the thing is that they work. But if you don't also concomitantly learn skills, you're just going to be stuck with a one-trick pony. But they are a one-trick pony. They are a trick. So don't just discount them, because sometimes when you're, it's just a rush, man. You're going to be starving walking into that restaurant. Slam that shake, have that quick apple, and then take a deep breath and you can calm down. Meal replacement do have great evidence, just like keto, for short-term weight loss. No doubt about it. And some people use them less, but for maintenance. I like a product called Z-Pro 25. I don't have anything to do with the company. It's what we use at Henry Ford, at Trinity, at Beaumont. Now it's usually only available at hospitals. Now it's on Amazon. It's a great kind of one sachet, mix it up real quick. I use it with some PB2 peanut butter and just my blender bottle or spin it with some frozen fruit but whatever, it doesn't really matter, which kind. You can even use your own whey protein and blends, but I was thinking more in terms of quick and easy. And that's where these ready to drinks like Slim Fast High Protein or Muscle Milk or whatever, again, I don't care. It doesn't matter. But I just don't want to, make them seem like they're magic. They're really just a quick and simple. And I just didn't, that's a double negative. Didn't want to not mention them. They all work.
Okay. So, I knew the time was going to fly on us, because there's a couple other things that I wanted to touch on along these lines. So when it comes to simplifying your nutrition and what you're doing, because a big part of that, and one of your keys, is physical activity, because the level of your physical activity is also going to probably dictate what you do with your calorie load. And you really don't even need to geek out with people to get it too far down into the weeds, because that can, if you start talking about when you should eat, like before your workout, after your workout, pre, post load, all those things, it just gets to be too much too fast. And so, for people that are on, that are trying to lose weight and they're on a new program, one of the things that they're probably going to have to be is in a calorie deficit just a little bit. But some people like to work out to accelerate some of these gains that they're going to have, or get fit for different reasons. For cops, right? I think physical activity is one of those non-negotiables. It's something that you have to do, because your job requires it. Like you're going to need to be physical at some point, because it's going to save your life, or more importantly, the life of somebody else that you're entrusted to save. So you have to take that into account. So when it comes to thinking about what you're going to eat, when you're going to eat it, how you're going to do it, well, for a person that doesn't do anything, they need less. They're going to need less calories than one that is actually going to be physically active. And in trying to simplify all that, you actually mentioned the Tisamani tribe in this paper. So there, for those that are not familiar with this tribe, it's an indigenous people from Bolivia, and they have the lowest amount of cardiovascular disease of any population. And maybe, I don't know if you've read this book or not, but I've been dying to ask you if you can read that, but it's called Scarcity Brain. So I'm getting washed out here, and I get sunlight comes in through my window. It's written by Michael Easter. He also wrote a book called The Comfort Crisis, and they're two fantastic books. But he actually went and visited the Tisamani tribe, and he just this past January, he released on his, he's got, I think he calls it the 2%. It's on, I think it's on Substack or whatever, but you can find him, just Michael Easter. He does a deep dive on the Tisamani, what their activity levels are, what it's like living. But from a nutrition standpoint, this is something I think everybody can get behind. If you can find things that you're eating that are just single ingredient foods, it really almost doesn't matter what it is. If those are the only things that you eat, like steak, potato, broccoli, fill in a vegetable, fruit, plantain, I don't care what it is. If there's only one ingredient because it's grown in nature, then you're probably going to be okay. If you're eating just those things, where we start to get in trouble, what we mentioned earlier, is added fats. And then you get into salts, sugars, and fats, and the different things. Then you can get into seed oils and all those other different complications. But just to keep it really simple, that I think that's a great way to help people start as well. Like, okay, eat like my grandmother did, which was, I mean, I grew up in an Irish family, youngest of eight kids. So when food got put on the table in front of me, you ate fast and you got what you got. There wasn't snacks. You didn't wander into the kitchen and find food later, because there was nothing around. Like, my mom, I think, had to hide food. But that's why in the 60s and 70s, and quite frankly, even in the early 80s, you didn't see obesity levels like you do now. And there's a ton of reasons that go into that. But I don't know. I wanted you to talk about that because you mentioned it in your paper, and I've only seen a few people actually talking about that.
I had a chance to actually interview Michael Gervin, Professor Gervin of who had lived with, I mean, the chamane, and is you could see that on my YouTube. It's true. I mean, when you simplify food choices like that, there's no question you're going to get the advantages of the, for instance, the whole plant foods. Calories count, but they only count if you absorb them. And then obviously, they're quite a physically active community. But we've seen from oh no, Ponser, from Herman Ponser, now that physical activity is kind of overrated for weight loss. Now, for physical health and fitness and for weight maintenance, different animal, no pun intended. But for weight loss, it's really interesting. It's not as powerful as nutrition is. But that's one thing I do like about the Pritikin Edge. I think all the recipes there are 3 to 5. Right? I mean, it's very ingredients. I mean, it's very simple. And so that advantage is there. If you want to get more complicated, that's where you have to start doing that more of that portion control. You have to start really applying things. If you want to be more mindless, then the simpler you make your ingredients, the less you have to think. So there's that advantage there. So there's no question about it. And then the more you can reflect that in your environment, so that whatever you reach to is automatically that, it also makes the path easier. Now, setting it up that way is a different story. But what you do find in these people that take these 2 years, to finally get to where the odds of long-term success greatly increase, and this is what we saw from the National Weight Control Registry, is that there's in all five of these domains, psychology or mind matters, nutrition, physical activity, environments, and accountability, there's no single skill that's complicated, but it's a bunch of little skills. It's like becoming a mixed martial artist. You can learn a Kimura, you can learn an Americana, you can learn an arm bar, you can, but they're each one, but putting it all together and getting and learning how to deal like you would in a situation, that's a different story. It takes time to put all that together. And so it takes time to, okay, where is it in the grocery aisle? And then, okay, now that's no longer stressful. That's an autopilot. And then how about this recipe? And okay, where do I find the Morton light salt? Where okay, now that's easy. And now finally, everything is easy. There's the 2 years right there. And in that time, it's nice, by the way, in terms of accountability, to consider getting a coach, whether it's a dietitian, a psychologist, a trainer, a buddy. If it is a spouse, great, you got that. God bless you. That's a wonderful, but or a psychologist, some, and I'm telling you right now, I'm not judging. I needed a psychologist. I've been in the chair over 100 times. I love psychologists. I'm a psych major. And I think if someone, if they're going to send a sports player who's having is in a rut to hit a ball, whether it's a golf ball or catching a football or hitting a baseball, look, I know sports are wonderful, and I love sports, and I wish the Lions would have won. Don't make me go there. Took my son to the Vikings and the Rams and the Buccaneers, only to have it end that way. But the bottom line is, if we're going to send a sports player to a cognitive behavioral therapist about a ball, our life is a much more important game than that. Then get that as a coach. But the coaching aspect of it is really important. get that kind of help that you need. It could even be a sleep coach, for instance.
Oh,
But hopefully
yeah.
people will get all these skills put together. And maybe the one that we didn't mention is that, you know, the non-exercise activity time. When you're losing weight, I would say that I like aerobic exercise. Don't get me wrong. As far as law enforcement, you got to do what you got to do. You got to be in cardiovascular shape. That's true. But if we're just talking about strictly weight loss, if you have to pick, and let's say we're talking to a general audience, that resistance training, you know, not trying to build muscle. I'm going to tell you, you're probably on a calorie deficit. You have to kill yourself to build muscle and lose fat, at least maintaining it though.
Yeah, you don't want to lose any.
Resistance training and just walking, what we call NEAT or non-exercise activity time, will be key, because really intense exercise, by the way, also chronic sitting, both chronic sitting and really intense exercise tend to stimulate appetite. I mean, it's odd, but from the East, from Bangladesh data to the United States, we see the same thing. Your chronic sitting and high levels of intense physical activity both stimulate appetite. Whereas this kind of mild movement throughout the day, let's say Blue Zones kind of style, seems to kind of not su maybe suppress, but maybe it doesn't aggravate appetite. So one of the tricks to weight loss is, who's did that? Leslie Sansone, walking off the pounds. I can't remember. Was it? There
Yeah.
is something to that. Not maybe so much that it burns calories, but more, but doesn't stimulate appetite. So I hope that was, kind of a reasonable overview of the five keys, if you will. And my hat's off to people in law enforcement. I think that, if there's anything I can say, the many, and from state police to local police to university police to some FBI. I mean, it's just, really and military as well, by the way. It's funny. I have one funny little story about a veteran who came in to see me that I honestly never really wanted to. I could tell that he did it because his primary care doctor, who I think was more like a drill sergeant, told him to. But after about 6 months, he had some great results, and I was trying to motivate him. I had all these smiley faces. The fatty liver was gone. The A1C was in the normal range, and we're in the where they we know we had the hydraulic exam table up because I had all the patients standing when they came in, and he's looking at his labs, all the smiley faces, and he looking at him, and he throws it down on the examining table, and he said, "You know, doc, this lifestyle shit really works." Well, there's my next
Yeah.
shirt.
Well, vets and cops, a lot of cops are vets, but they do have a lot of similarities in that sometimes we have to learn the hard way to figure it out that there is an easier way.
But it does work. I mean, if you've got a why, and you've listened to what we're talking about and keep listening to this podcast, the biometrics are there. They don't lie. They can add 10 years to your life, quality years. You don't have to live the last 10 to 15 years like we see most North Americans in sickness. I see my father go through it, and it's all happening all too often. It is in your control. So the one thing that you mentioned before, it is true. It's not your fault. We've got a very set up environment, but that doesn't mean that you're not empowered to be able to take the skills that we're trying to convey to you here and do something about it. So I appreciate the opportunity.
All right. So I know you got a hard stop and we're gonna end this now. I have a tendency to blab on, so I'm just gonna make this real brief and we'll cut this one off. Where can people find you to learn more about your flexitarian plan, your Flex 5 plan?
The best place at this time, and it's going to start to be even more robust, in all honesty, across other platforms, including Instagram, YouTube, and so forth. But really, right now is the Facebook page. So if you go to Facebook and you either use the URL facebook.com/DrTomMD, just DrTomMD, or you just use the search engine on Facebook for Dr. Tom Rifai, that's DrTomRifai, MD. And then you'll see an FACP, but by the time you get to MD, it'll already pop up. The FACP stands for Fellow of the American College of Physicians. That's the page. Click like, follow me there. I'm doing videos. I do posts. There's a whole bunch of video library there is great. I'm on YouTube as well. There's a great video library. And if you do LinkedIn, I think that's where we've connected as well, right? That's
Absolutely.
yeah, made a
Yes.
lot. There's some prof. I don't do as much of the food stuff on LinkedIn, but that's a good place to connect with me as well.
Awesome. Well, I'm going to do a little summary after we disconnect here. But before that, I just wanted to thank you again for your time. I know you're very busy, so we really appreciate you spending some of your valuable time with us, dropping some knowledge bombs on us, and helping us understand that there is a path forward. You said it, I'll say it. Find a coach. Find a coach that will accelerate the path for you. You don't, there are people out there that have been there, that have done that, that understand what works and what doesn't work. So don't try to reinvent the wheel. Don't make it harder than it is. Coaches can accelerate that. Don't be afraid to get psychological help as well if you need that. All these resources are available. Most agencies have it available to you as well. Make sure you engage with them in your wellness programs at your police department. And of course, you can always reach out to me as well. And I'll point you in the direction where I think would be very helpful, because that's all I can do is provide options. I don't necessarily have all the answers, but I can help provide options. And that's why we love to have experts like you that can come on and help us. So thank you very much for your time.
Absolutely. My pleasure, Patrick. Thank you very much.